Boker Tov World. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Eretz Chemda Teva Rechava, is daf Nun Vav, and we are holding at the Halakha Mishnah, right near the top of the daf. And so we're moving on today from our discussion of Behemoth directly to the discussion of Ofot. What are the various trefot with Ofot? Now, obviously, all of the essential trefes that we find in mammals are also considered to be trefot by Of. And therefore, why do we need the Mishnah? We need the Mishnah because remember that birds have certain parts that are not the same as mammals. And they also have some places in which they have different dinim. For instance, I mean, we know that a bird is kosher only with one simen for shkita. That would give us pause to consider that maybe there's a difference in terms of the trefus of the veshet and the kane because they don't have the same din at all. The bird is much more sensitive. After all, only one simen is enough to be matrid. So let's take a look at these various dinim and we'll discover that because of the fact that birds, remember, besides having certain different organic structures, for instance, because of the fact that the bird eats seeds, it needs to have a couple of pieces of additional equipment that mammals don't have. So it's got a zephek, which is a gizzard in which it holds these various seeds as it eats a crop. It's got a gizzard, which is a special, very muscular post-stomach stomach, which you've all seen, of course. And it looks like this little, very, very thick, which are the muscles of that special korkovan, as it's called in Lashon HaKodesh, the gizzard. Those things don't even exist when it comes to a mammal. Now, there's other very important differences, one of which is that in order to allow birds to fly, their bone structure is very, very different than a mammal's bone structure because they could not fly if their bones weighed as much as mammalian bones. So because of that, the bones are much lighter and have a much more open structure to allow them to be nowhere near as thick. But that can cause other differences because remember, we've got problems of bones when it comes to breakages in the skull and the possible impact on the three levels of cranial membranes that are under the skull, only one of which the Gemara considers to be the real cranial membrane because it goes around the entire brain instead of being stuck to the skull. But these will be differences, perhaps. Not only that, there are different structures in the birds that live essentially in water, the marine birds, and birds that actually go and fly all over the place. And we're going to see that we need to take all of that into consideration in the level of trefus that we have with birds. So because of that, anything that's discussed in this Mishnah needs to be justified, because otherwise it was already included in our opening Mishnah, Veilu Trefus, which would have included birds. And so, let's try to figure out why we mention each one of these things, which, of course, we'll see more of in the Gemara. So, we have Nekuvata Veshet Ipsukas HaGageres, which, of course, is exactly the same as we have with an animal. The reason that we mention it is because you might have thought that since a bird is far more sensitive, it's possible, I would have thought, that maybe they would become trefa even if there was just a nekuva of the kana. After all, it's just one simen that is matir them, kamash malon, that in fact it's the same din as with a mammal. It would only be psukas hagageras. Now, suppose it got, now this is actually, we're going to see, it means bitten. It got bitten by a chulda, so let's say a rat. I mean, again, remember that the traditional way that the chulda was understood was a weasel. Okay, So a chulda bites. A chulda has extremely thin and rounded teeth, as we'll see. Certain more curved teeth, I should say. In a place where it's osa osa trifa. So a place that's osa osa trifa means on the skull where it is keneged the cranial membrane. So in such a case, then we would have what appears to be the same idea, and that is that it would be a trefa if the cranial membrane was actually got a hole in it, and it's synovial dafkef was in that kind of place. And so isn't that really the din by a mammal as well? In a sense, yes, but in a sense, no. Because when it says mokum shorsoso trefa, it means that having a hole through the skull that doesn't actually penetrate what the Gemara considers to be the central membrane of the brain, which is the lowest of the membranes, the third membrane. In this case, we can't just look at it the same way that we do with the mammal. Because in the case of the mammal, you might have thought that over here, if over there we have just one of the membranes missing, remember, ilo velo tato. So we said it's possible, we had that machlokas, that would mean that ultimately you will have a puncture in the end. Remember, every incipient trefa is considered to be a trefa currently. You might have thought the same is true from on a bird in Kobash Malan, that it's basically the membrane itself that is going to be a trefa. We'll see how we could possibly check that since it is so delicate. And therefore, we need to know that it's only going to be a trefa if it was mokum shoso oto trefa, as we'll see. How about if the korkovan, as we said, is the gizzard, the korkovan had a hole in it. Now that, we don't have an organ like that in the animals, so therefore it had to let us know that that is also considered to be nifsal with a nekev. Nikvu hadaki, if the intestines got a hole in it, now you'll see, but I already know that. I know that from the opening Mishnah on Menbeis, which is the din of the all of the mammals. So why would it not be true of the more sensitive bird? So the truth is that we're going to see that you might have thought, and we're going to see differences, in fact, in the birds in this area, you might have thought that even if the intestines were nishpachu, they weren't actually punctured, but they were simply, they had fallen out through an accident. So the bird had been ripped open, that if there was no actual hole, then it would not be possible, and you would have thought that it would have been trefa. Here we have, according to most Rishonim, this next one is a special din only to affect birds. It does not affect mammals. And this is where nafza lo'ur v'nechmeru b'nei me'er. If a bird, which has very little protection, really, to its internal organs, compared to that thick mammal, and the ribs, very heavy bones, and so on and so forth. If a bird falls into an open fire, and it was scorched, and we could check the inside of the bird to see whether the heat actually had damaged any internal organs. So if they turned green, if they are their natural red, then they are ksherim. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara that obviously this depends on the organ that you're talking about. Depends what the normal color is. In the Gemara, we're going to see that what we're talking about over here is specifically the lave and the korkovan, which are normally red if they turn green. So then it's considered to be a problem. But the truth is the inverse might also be true. Something that's normally green, like the intestines that turned red, maybe that's a problem. All to be examined in the Gemara. If those things which are normally red remain red, so then they're kosher. Now, how about if somebody steps on a bird or throws it against a wall or an animal walks over it and is ritzatzta? That's the equivalent of a Nephula. Of course, we can't have the case of Nephula by a bird because birds fly, and therefore they don't fall off of the roof, which is the case that we had in the opening Mishnah. So we know that Nephula min Agag is certainly not the trefa of a bird, but there's an equivalent trefa of a bird. And the equivalent trefa of the bird is where something fell on it or somebody stepped on it. Now, remember that when it comes to a mammal, the halacha is of a Nephula, that we're not chayish for risuk evarim if that animal survives for 24 hours. Okay, but then we would need a bedika. But if it gets up right away, so then we don't need to wait the 24 hours. And if it's mishalith and it walks, and we said even if it was pashta yada or it was ninara, that that would be considered to be getting up. And if it walks, it actually walks, don't even need a bedika. Do we have an equivalent din by a bird? Not precisely, but there is a halacha of the bird moving, fluttering around, b'fachesed, and it stays alive for 24 hours, then you can actually eat it if you shechted it properly, and then it would be kashera. And we're going to see that this does not mean it does not need a bedika. It still needs a bedika as opposed to the case of holcha by a mammal. So basically all of these cases are somewhat different when it comes to the bird. So Rav, Shmuel, and Levi all said that in the case where it was the case of the chulda, was bitten on the head, makom she'asar to trefa, that still needs a bedika to make sure that the cranial membrane, which, as you can imagine, is, to talk about paper thin is a joke. It's almost invisible. So how in the world would you be able to do a bedika on a tiny bird brain? They don't say bird brain for nothing. On a tiny, that doesn't mean they're not intelligent, remember? But it's the enemy birds that are really intelligent, you know? The crows. The Oravim, aha, those are really intelligent, frighteningly intelligent. Don't start up with a crow. I had a crow over here in Latanya that used to, it hated me. This one particular crow used to go after me every time I walked by the beach. It would attack me and knock off my yarmulke. Crazy. Anyway, but these bird brains, they're not very big, even if they might be very intelligent. So how do we do a bedika? So Rav Shmuel and Levi said, we'll tell you how to do a bedika. Machnis yado lifnim, put your finger inside the mouth of the bird and press up against the top of the mouth. That puts pressure on the brain. In the vatzveitz v'olev, so if anything comes out of the top of the head, then that means that you've got some of the contents of the skull, which is brain stuff, that's coming out. So then it's trefa. But if not, so then it means that there's no hole in that cranial membrane. But wait a minute. What about the machlokas that we had before when it comes to the mammals? Remember that the question over there was, do we say that the top membrane, which is attached to the skull, is that itself enough to make it a trefa or not? We had that as a machlokas. So if you hold, according to the Man d'Yomar, that only if the lower membrane, the lowest membrane, there's really three different membranes, actually probably four if you take it into consideration, almost invisible, actually a machlokas of how to define it, not mahalokha, machlokas between the medical definition of it. So, if you hold that it's not a trefa unless the very lowest membrane has a hole in it, okay, so then I understand this is a good test. But if you hold, according to the Man d'Yomar, that even if the lowest membrane is whole, that the upper membrane, if it's broken through, it is ultimately, it's one of these incipient trefas, and it's going to be therefore the equivalent of an inkiftata. So then, according to him, maybe pressing up against the top of the mouth is not going to show you anything because the lowest membrane is intact, but it still is a trapha because it's an incipient trapha. No, because I'll tell you. Iita de inkibila, even if the upper one is the only part that has a hole in it, the fact is that the actual membrane is so thin that the tata agav ruchve mifka paka, because of its roch, because of its softness, it would have burst and it would have released also the material that would have then come out on the top of the skull. So because of that, it is a proper bedika according to all. Now, it also raises a fascinating issue, because if the upper membrane has a hole which is not directly above the lower membrane, so then it's not an incipient trapha, right? So if, therefore, we would not have an actual good bedika in a case where we ruptures even the lower membrane, the problem is, if it's not connected that place, it's not showing you the incipient trapheus. The incipient trapheus is where, if you would press and break, you press against the top of the mouth. So you're pressing against the palate of the bird, which is connected its brain. And now, even if there was a hole there, if it's not connected the upper hole, then nothing's going to come out. And because of that, Zairi points out that in the very case in the Mishnah where a chulda actually did bite through the skull, there's no way to be bodek it. Because since it has very, very, we think this means very, very thin teeth, you can't do a bedika. What? My Avi, who cares how thin it is? The slightest hole, if you're pressing up against the top of the mouth, it's going to put pressure on the brain and the contents will come out. So who cares? My habit. Omer Voshaya, Ziri didn't mean just thin. He meant it was thin and curved. So because of that, when it bites through the skull, the hole that's in the lower membrane is not going to be up against the hole that's above it in the skull. And because of that, even if you press up against it, it's not going to be able to come through the top of the skull because it's being blocked by the actual bone of the skull. So therefore, how would you be able to be biting it? But when Zairi moved up to Narda, he sent a message back to Bavel, town of Bavel, and he said, "Dvarim she'amarti lachnechem ta'uten biyadi. I made a mistake in that psak, and I told you that if a chulda bites it, there's no way to check it, and I was wrong, because Bram kach amru mishmeder Reb Shimon ben Lakish. I learned over here when I got to Narda that Reish Lakish said, 'Bodkin lachulda biyad. You can make a bedika by pressing up against the top of the mouth, but you should not do that bedika by using a sharp point.'" Now, sharp point would be an alternative method of checking it. You can remove the skull and you can run a nail, let's say, a masmer, very gently across that membrane. If there's any place where there is a hole, then it's going to snag against that hole. So don't do that, because if you use that, it's probably going to puncture it itself, and then you'll have to paskin that it's a trefa, even though it wasn't a trefa. So that's no way to do a bedika. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, not true. Af b'masmer, we don't have, not so worried about it. You can even do it with the masmer, and the likelihood of your not being careful enough and making a hole just because you're lightly letting a nail go over it, it's not a fingernail, this is a nail, And this machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish actually is similar to a machlokas that we have among Tanoim. It's not the same machlokas as we'll see, but it's very close. Because Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah argue, and one of them would be bodek bayada, which means pressing up against the top of the mouth. And one of them was bodek with a nail. So man the bodak biyada, so the one who used to use the bedika by pressing up on the top of the nail, the head, the mouth, would say to the one who would use the nail, what's the matter with you? The man the bodak biyada, man the bodak b'machta, matay atan b'chalem amonam shal Yisrael. What kind of crazy way is that to do a bedika? You're going to tell people that it's a treifa because you made it a treifa. You're the one who made it, not literally made it a treifa, but you made the hole that makes them think it's a treifa. So how many times do I have to tell you? You're throwing out people's good money by basketing treifas. This is not a treifa. Yeah. Boy. When Brucey said Richie's Island, he meant Richie's Island. Let me tell you. Welcome, Richie's Island. Okay, great. We're very happy to be with you today, Sir Richard. Glad to see that you made it. Okay. Gets harder and harder.
You're getting harder and harder.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you about the trip from Yerushalayim to Netanya. I mean, this is really no joke.
especially in the roads are rather clogged, but then in place. Anyway.
All right, wonderful. Oh, you're not going to take away your picture today, are you? Ah, come on. Okay. Beautiful. So, how long are you going to waste people's money by using this ridiculous nail and therefore causing that hole? Whereas the one who would use the nail would say to the one who would check by pressing up against the top of the mouth, how long are you continuing to feed people mevelas? Disgusting. What kind of bedika is that? Mevelas? What do you mean mevelas? Certainly not an avela. I mean, the most of this is a treifa. Come on. I mean, you know, I love that very suggestive language, which isn't even true. All right, treifas. How long are you going to keep feeding people treifas? So what does that mean? So in other words, shemanikev krum shomoach. It's not a good bedika because maybe there actually is a hole. And since it was, like Zairi said, since it was a very thin curved tooth, maybe that's why it didn't come out because we didn't have one above the other. So it's essentially the same machlokas. According to this, Reish Lakish apparently, so he agrees with the one who says, don't use the nail, don't use the needle. And Rabbi Yochanan says, it's fine. And therefore, it's not precisely tanoi, because look, I mean, in this case, everyone tainas against the each one, tainas against the other one. How you need to do that? That's no good. But Rabbi Yochanan said, even with the masmer, he didn't say only with the masmer, so he wouldn't have agreed to the idea, no, that's not a bedika. He just said you can also use that. Okay, but it's similar. So essentially, we have three different shitot. Only with a nail, only with a hand, or either one, which was Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, now, you said Chad Amar for Chad Amar, but you didn't tell me which one was which. You couldn't explain to me. You didn't have enough information. What is Rabbi Yehuda hold and what is Rabbi Nechemiah hold? Well, I'm going to tell you who said what. We often do that when we have any kind of riot. It allows us to be more specific. After we learned one said this, one said the other, we try to be tistayim. We try to actually conclude which one is which. So I'm going to tell you which one is which. I think like this. I think that you can show that it's Rabbi Yehuda who was the one who was budding biyada. He was the one that said pressing up against the top of the mouth is the way to check the tanya. Take a look at his price. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer mishum Rabbi Yehuda. Bodkin l'chulda biyad, avalo b'masmer. So here Reb Yehuda is quoted as saying, you can check only by pressing up against the top of the mouth, but you cannot check with a nail. Nishbar ha'etzem afa pishel amikav krum shamoach. Now, this next piece is not going to make any sense. The more is going to ask about it. That in the event that the skull was broken through, and it's saying you can't make a bedika. I thought we just said you could make a bedika. Okay, this is a Gemara we'll talk about. So if we see that this weasel had broken through the skull, or in any case, we broke through the skull, and even though there is no hole through the membrane, which goes against everything we just learned, it's nonetheless, it's still going to be a trefa. Okay, fine. Forget about the contradiction for a moment, because it's self-contradiction. It's not stomach contradiction. The Braita makes no sense. First, it talks about how to make the bedika, and then it says you can't make a bedika. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? But anyway, meanwhile, we clearly see that it's Reb Yehuda, because Reb Shimon ben Elazar was quoting Reb Yehuda in saying that you can use the finger against the top of the mouth, so the finger on the palate is the way to check. Okay, so now we know he's the one. Anyway, but what did you just say? It didn't make any sense what you just said. You said, a goof akasha. First you started off by saying how to do the bedika v'chud. You said do the bedika biyad, but not with a masmer. Alma eat le bedika, but I mean, clearly there is a way to do a bedika, right? And then you say, oh no, if it's broken through, you can't do a bedika. What does that mean? If you say it's a chud, if it... First you say Isle Bedika, and then you say Nishbar Etzem. Afo Pishalonikev Krum Shomoach. So if it means that it's a trefa even without breaking through the cranial membrane, so what kind of bedika could we make? Alma Letle Bedikuta. That implies that there is no bedika to make. So how do you have a bright that contradicts itself like that? Ah, this is what's important. Not all birds are the same. And the last part of the Braita, which said, Mordechai. The last part of the Braita, which says that there is a immediate trefus in breaking the skull, is referring to water birds. So those kind of birds that live at ducks, let's say, we'll see what else it would be included, but like a duck, I mean, if Richie were there, he could show us maybe a couple of ducks going around in the water, but no, he's not even going to allow us. After all, his porridge is more important than our Ela Dreyfus. That's what you see from here. But anyway, the Seifa is talking about waterfowl, right? They're called marine fowl. And that has a different structure, and it has no cranial membrane. What? Come off it, man. Ain't look room. Come on, there's no such thing as a brain without a membrane around it. What do you mean? No. Saying its membrane is so sensitive and so thin that there's no way to be bodek it, because look, it's not gonna actually make it for very long without the skull being whole. And therefore it's an incipient trefa immediately. Okay, and this itself is, I don't know, it's almost a mantra in which we like to talk about marine fowl not having cranial membranes and everybody being shocked. What? And then we answer, well, what we mean is, okay, I don't know why this is important in so many different contexts, but it was sort of one of those kind of shocking statements that a lot of people were shocked by, and that really, we have to explain again and again. So, Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Anan. Now, you used to tell us that Shmuel was bodek a bird that was bitten by the case in the Mishnah, by the Chulda, and he would be machshir it if there was no problem of any kind of brain matter leaking out. And Huna, our dear Chavrusa over here, he said that Rav would be bodek biyad of a maksha. Rav would do the same thing. He would press up against the top of the mouth, against the palate, and he would check. But we have a braita that Levi brought, a Tani Levi, that Lutrefos Shemonu Chachamim Babahima, Kenegdan Baal. First of all, you have to know that anything that is listed as a trepha in a mammal is automatically a trepha in a similar organ in a bird. But there's more chumra by a bird, yeter aleim, the oaf, which is that nishbar ha'etzem afa pisho nikev krum shomar. If the skull was broken, then even if the membrane was whole, it would still be a trepha. So what were Shmuel and Rav thinking when they did a bedika? It wouldn't make any difference if the membrane were whole, if the skull was broken through. Omar Lezer Nachman said, that's your misunderstanding. They were talking about a bird that wasn't a marine bird. And Levi was talking about Ba'ov Shomayim. And the reason that there it's a trepha, even though there was no hole through the cranial membrane, is because a Ov Shomayim doesn't have a Krum Shomoach. What? What? Ain't no Krum Shomoach? What? That's crazy. Well, what I actually mean is, oh, the Krumo Rach. And the same maysa happened with that chicken that was in Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan had this chicken, and he had this problem of Nishbar, and he sent it to Rav Masna, to Paskin. It was Nishbar Ha'etzem. He checked it, and it was Lo Nikev Krum Shomayach, and he said, it's kosher. And Rav Chanan said, if it was broken, how could it be kosher? What about the Brisa of Levi that says Trefa Shemonu Chachamim Bebehema are the same with an oaf, except for Nishbar Ha'etzem over there, Afa Pishaloni Kev Krum Shomoach. So how could you possibly have been Machshered? Omar Leh, that's talking about an oaf Shomayim. Marine fowl have no cranial membranes. What? What? Have no cranial membranes. That's crazy. How could you think such a thing? Ein lo krum salkataitach. Well, what it really means is hoyo vikrumo rach. They don't have any significant cranial membrane. Anyway, there were different ways of being bolek. So we spoke about pressure against the top of the mouth, which would check to see if there was a hole. We talked about running a sharp thing over the top of the, after you take off the skull, running a sharp thing over it. Rav Shizibi, he used to be bodek by holding up the membrane to the sun and seeing whether there was a hole in it, because it would, even if it was a tiny hole, as you passed it in front of your eyes, the sunlight would come through and he could check it that way. Of course, he would have to wash off all of the material that after he did that autopsy. Rav Yemar would check it with water. And how do you check it with water? So again, one way of understanding it would mean checking it with water by putting water into it and seeing whether any of it leaks out, which is one shot that Rashi brings. And the other is that he checked it with water, which makes, since we're going to see more about this later, to be medayik, you would check it with water by pouring water on the outside and seeing whether the water was discolored by mixing with any brain matter that it would have mixed with if there had been a hole. Okay, that was the other shot that Rashi suggests. So there was another way of doing it, which is a sort of a takeoff on the needle or the nail approach, and that would be by using something that maybe would be less sharp than a nail, but would still catch. So Rav Acha Bar Yaakov used to be bodekit with a gila de chitasa, with a little piece of straw from wheat, which catches very easily. And that wouldn't cause the same kind of damage as easily as a needle would. So it's a takeoff, a variant of the nail approach. Omer of Shizbi, you know, those Canadian geese, well, like everything else in Canada, it's our problem. And those Canadian geese, Hani Avze Didan, those kind of geese that hang around here, they are considered to be, even though they walk around a lot, and they're considered to be an Ov Shomayim, and therefore, if there was a breakage in the skull, they would have that same chumrah, and we couldn't do a bedikah. Now, moving on to the next piece of Mishnah, was Nafla Lo'ur. So, we said that a bird has a special, as I mentioned, there is a machlokas rishonim Whether it's shy of such a thing by a behemoth, most told not, because the behemoth is well protected, internal organs are well protected, have been burned to such an extent that it affected internal organs, would have anyway killed the animal, and you would see the whole outside of the animal would have been burned, so it doesn't make sense. But, okay, anyway, so the question in the Mishnah was nafal ba'ur, and we said, you do a bedika. The bedika consists of checking to see whether it turned green because of the burn. So now, problem is, first of all, how much of it turns green? And furthermore, there are some organs that are usually green. I mean, intestines are greenish. So, like, what are we referring to? So, first of all, what's the shear? Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Yehoshua, the shear for turning green is similar to the shear of the nekev. So if you're talking about something that would be nifsal, would be nitraf b'mashu, so then manikuvato b'mashu, afu katan b'mashu. So to be the tiniest bit of green would be enough. So you have to look very carefully. Moimine Rav Yosef, brother of Yeshua ben Levi, he asked his father, he asked Rav Yeshua ben Levi, how about if you've got a green mark on the liver where it's right up against the intestines. Now, there's no din of the kuvas hakovid, right? Shouldn't be a problem of the kovid. Question is whether it's indicative of the heat of the fire reaching already to the b'nei me'ayin. And indeed, Rabbi Shimon Levi told him, it is shreifa. But why? Isn't, his son asks him, Mara asks, why? Lo yeh el netula. Let it be no worse than actually if the kaved was removed. We said as long as there was something left, it would be kosher. So who cares if it's discolored? On our Rava, the point over here, the question had been that kivan shehorika kaved kineged b'nei me'ayim b'yodua shenafu l'ur v'nechmeru b'nei me'ayim v'treifa. The point is that this is an indication that the heat had penetrated all the way up to the intestines. The fact that I don't see the impact on the intestines is not important. I see the impact on the liver right next to the intestines, so that itself is a riot. But that's what happened. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had an ow. What's that? Who's talking? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had a chicken, and it had fallen into a fire, and he sent it to Rabbi Elazar HaKafar Baribi to Paskin, and he said, no, everything is nice and green, and so it's kosher. Huh? What? The Mishnah says if it's green, that's the sign that it's treifa. It said over here that if it's green, it's pasul. You're telling me it's nice and green, so it's kosher. What am I missing over here? Says Rabbi Elazar HaKafar, that's why I said it. I need to teach you that when it says in the Mishnah, Lo Omru Yulukim Psulim, Ela Bekurkavon, Deleva Bekaveit, the idea of the green is only on those parts that are normally red. So if you're talking about the gizzard or the heart or the liver, those things are normally red. But in this case, we were looking at the problem in the intestines. The intestines are normally green. So therefore, I'm telling you, I checked it out, and it's perfectly normal. Tanya Namiachi, and there's a brayta that says, like Rabbi Elazar HaKafar Baribi, Be'evu b'nei me'ayim omru. Which one of the organs were we talking about where we could check the color and say that if it's green, it's possible? Which organs that are possible? The Rekurkavan Belevel Vikaveit, only those organs that are normally red. And that's what we're referring to. Now the question is, does it go in the opposite direction? So that something that's normally green, if it turns red, that would make it kosher. Treifa, Sereb Yitzchak Bar Yosef, he also had a chicken that had been burned, and Shadre Lakami to Rabbi Abo, and Rabbi Abo said, oh my gosh, it's all red, and therefore it's treifa. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says, but red, that's what makes it kosher. The Mishnah says adumim kisherim, and you're telling me it's all red and therefore it's treif. What am I missing? Amarle, that's why I said it. The same way that the Mishnah says adumim shoriko, it's true in the inverse. If yerukim were edimu, so then that means if the intestines are normally greenish, they turn red, is the same problem. Lo omru adumim kisherim ela b'leiv v'kurkamanu v'kavei. But if the intestines turn red and they're normally greenish, then that's a sign that they have been damaged by the heat. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Chiya, Omer Rabbi Mani, Adumim Shoriku. If you had it looked like it turned green and you wanted to pass it and make it a treif. And then you boiled it up in water. And then they turned red. The chazer, they turned back to their original color. They had demon, had kosher. Because the only time that we say that if it turned green, it's pasul, that is where it actually turned green. Not because of the fact that the smoke has changed the color of the organ because the blood didn't have any kind of oxygen at that time. That's kutra ailibu. That's just because of the smoke. That's not because it actually changed the color of the organ. So if you boil it up and you get to the original color of the flesh itself, then it's not going to be a sign of tarfus. And Omer Nachum Bar Yitzchok, afanan nami nomar. So then if that's the case, we could say the opposite. We could say that if you had something that was normally red, and it didn't turn green. Okay, so you thought it was kosher, and you went ahead, and you boiled it up, and you made a dinner out of it, and now it turned green when you boiled it. So that's a sign that it's trefa. My time, why? Because now we see. Igloi ba'atayu. Now we see what was wrong all along. It was trying to hide behind an unnatural color. Well, we got it clear now. And if that's the case, says Rav Ashi, so then you shouldn't eat it unless you boil it to make sure that it doesn't, even though you don't see any sign of tarfus, but you should first boil it up and then take a look, because then the tarfus will be exposed. Velohi, that is not true. It's a nice chumrah if you're looking for one-upmanship chumras. You can list this. Maybe Gavi should start keeping a list of special one-upmanship chumras. But if you're looking for a one-upmanship chumrah, it's definitely the latest thing that you could publish and sort of be on top of the game just for a couple of days. But you'll be on top of the game. But it's not true that la'alopet's required. Because of a klal, and this is a Gavi magic pen klal, Achzuke Reyesa Lo Maxakina. We do not assume, without seeing any reason to make such an assumption, we don't make assumptions to look for Isurim because they might be there. It's only if there's something that made us suspect that it would be that way. But even though in this case we had very strong grounds to suspect that something was wrong, and we did do a bedika, that already is kosher. Once we establish that it's kosher, we're not machzik areyasa to be machmir, to boil it up and discover whether maybe our bedika was not good enough. Now, at the end of the Mishnah, it talks about the equivalent of the nefula. And what's the equivalent of nefula in that case? So the equivalent of nefula is somebody steps on it, throws it against a wall, an animal squishes it. Poor little birdies can be nefulas in the opposite way. Instead of their falling on something, something falls on them. So it says in the Mishnah that if it survives for 24 hours and it also flutters about a little bit, that it's fachesed, that the din is that it's kosher. But don't mistake that. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Antignus, don't mistake that kashrus for the equivalent in a mammal that walked about, in which case it wouldn't even need a bedika. Not true. Achazu, The Akazut Sheriff Badik, I don't care what the case is, somebody stepped on it or it got thrown onto a wall, whatever, it always needs a Badika to make sure that there was nothing that was broken inside, and you need to check that the spinal cord is good. And so the same Badikas that we talked about that might have happened in a case of an Afula that had not been Oime. And this brings us to a special moment on Richie's Island. A moment that has not taken place in an entire year. An absolute Halakha Mishnah coming directly off of the Baltic. You never know where a Halakha Mishnah may show up together with the marine fowl, which Richie hid from us today, but he'll at least give us his Kapitan's introduction.
Rabbi, I don't want to do it too loud. I'll scare away the deer. You know, we want to keep the natural fauna and flora in their place. I'll try.
Okay. I mean, you sound much flattered here. You probably attract them. You probably attract them, not scare them away.
Wow. Maybe you should spend more time there. You definitely seem to be in a heightened mood, let me tell you.
Maybe I should. I'll freeze during the winter. Why not?
The same way that we had our plus and minus Mishnahs for the mammals, the Elo Trefus Babahema and the Elo Kisheres Babahema, we have the same setup with the Ofot. So we talked about Elu Trefot, but the Of, let's talk about the things that would be kosher, that are similar to the Trefot, that we need to clarify. So Elu Kisherot Ba'of, if you have Nikva Gargaret Oshenistika, so that there too, you should know that even on an Of, which is more sensitive, if there was a hole in the Koneh, or even if it was split down lengthwise, it is kosher. If its skull was punctured, not connected the brain, so that is kosher. How about if the zefek had just a hole in it? So here, this is very interesting, because the zefek is essentially a pouch that is built of the veshet itself. The veshet expands on one side towards the bottom and becomes a pouch. So it's sort of like a diverticulate of the veshet. And the question is, you would have thought that since it's made of the same material, essentially, of stretched esophageal tissue, it would have the same din of nekuva that the veshet itself has. But it doesn't. And if the zefek has a hole in it, then it's not considered to be a treif. Rebbe says, forget about if it had a hole in it. Even if the entire zefek was removed, which, as the Rishonim point out, it doesn't really mean the entire zefek, because if the entire zefek was removed, then you'd have an impossibility for the bird to be able to get any nourishment, because how would anything get down into its stomach? But it means no matter how much was taken off, as long as it could still eat and survive, it's okay. I feel neat. Yatsu b'nei me'eha v'lo nikvu. How about if the bird was injured and the intestines spilled out and there was no hole in the intestines, but like that is definitely, you would have thought, it's an incipient treifa. No. If it's not nikev, there's no chashash of treifas. Nishtabru gapeha. Suppose the bones of the wings were broken. It's also kosher, and that is, of course, you might have thought that that's similar to a problem of, in a mammal, you might have thought it's similar to the problem of tzemes hagidin. It's not. You might have thought it's similar to the problem of Bukhari Atma, we're still waiting for that song from Naftali of the Bukhari Atma. It's not. Okay. How about if the legs were broken, though? Nishtabru Raglea. So now the question is, if you've got a break, we're going to see later on, there may be the type of break in the foot of the bird that would cause the psul, similar to the Tsumasagiri, which we will be talking about, which is a different way, different place of the Tsumasagiri. We'll be getting into those pictures. I'm sure someone will send us in, but that's later on. Right now, we've got another 3 weeks till we get there. So far, we'll just take it preposterous. If there was a broken leg, we'll see sometimes a broken leg actually is a trefa. What about if its feathers were plucked? You might have thought that that's the equivalent of a gluta. It's not. And if the feathers were plucked, it's kosher. But says Rabbi Yehuda, wait a minute. There is a gluta equivalent on a bird. Not the feathers in terms of the grown feathers that cover the body, the down feathers. The down feathers, which is called the notsat, the down feathers are the equivalent of the skin in terms of their protection of the bird. And imnitla ha-notsat, then that would be the equivalent of a gluda, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Wow. Okay, so we don't have that. Tanakama didn't even list that in the list of trefas. Apparently, it's Rabbi Yehuda's specific sheet. Tanarabon. There was once a maisa when Rabbi Simoy and Rabbi Tzadok were on their way to Lud. Why did they need to go to Lud? Barnea is going to explain. They needed to go to Lud to do Ibur Shana, and they couldn't do it anywhere else. Now, when was that, Rabbi Barnea? Tell us all of your historical learning. Uh-oh. So we've got a Barnea that's half asleep here. Uh-oh. Barnea! I don't think he even hears
it. Immediately after the Churban, because Rabbi Tzadok is there during the Churban and afterwards. So it's close afterwards. I don't know why not Yavne is Rabbi Tarfon and Lod that I don't know. I don't think there was Xeris then. It's before the Hadrianic Xeris. I don't know why they went to Lod, other than that was the center.
Okay.
There's an academic kindness that Lod was more important than Yavne throughout. This fits with that. Joshua Schwartz.
All right. Gives us some additional information, and we're grateful. Anyway, on their way, they spent Shabbos in Ono. And in Ono, they had a couple of shilohs of trefas. And over there, they gave, now this is very, very opaque, what exactly it means. They were more about the tarpachat. Remember, the tarpachat was another word for ya'em, ya'shlufti, the tarpachat. So it means a missing womb, a removed womb. And they were more in the tarpachat the way Rebbe, I don't know, it's very unclear. The Gemara is going to ask. The way Rebbe was more about the zefek. Now, Rebbe said about the zefek that even if it's removed, it's kosher. This would be a very strange way to say it. So what did that mean? Ibaila, what did you mean? That they had one or two piskei halachas. Was it two separate things? Horu b'tarpachat. So they were mera halacha that tarpachat is actually usher, and they had a separate shaila about what's the din of a missing zefek, and they were mera like Rebbe when it came to the zefek. Is that what it means, or is this all one thing? Odilma horu b'tarpachat lehetera. They said that the tarpachat is not a problem if it's removed, the same way that Rebbe said if a zefek is removed, it's not considered to be a problem. So Mamela, they wanted to put the two together to show that removal is not necessarily a big deal, but it's all one psak. We don't really know what the maisa was. But one thing is clear. A hole in the zefek, the Tanakama also said, is not considered to be a psul. The problem is that the zefek is, as I said, extended veshet. So at what point is it considered to be a part of the literal esophagus? And at what point is it considered to be a different organ where a puncture doesn't make any difference? Because there's no clear-cut differentiation in the type of tissue. So, Amar Rabba, V'yitem Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the top of the zefek is for sure part of the veshet. It's the exact same esophageal tissue that's running down towards the stomach, and that, if there's a hole, is the same as nikev hafesh. And it's only the rest of it that's not considered to be part of the esophagus. But what is called the top? I mean, it's very vague. Eicha, what do you mean the top? I mean, there's no clear-cut delineation. Omer of Bibi Barabaye, it means kol shenimtach imo. Now, the pashtus of what that would mean is that if you pull on it, it will pull up the zefek to become part of the veshel. But Rashi says that's not what it means. And Rashi shows that the lashon of nimtach does not only mean pulled on and stretched. It means where something curves up towards. And there's places that the word nimtach is used that way. And so that's what it means over here. So what does it mean? It means the place where it starts to curve up towards the top. Okay, fine. So we used it that way earlier. So that's what it means here, says Rashi. Now, the next case that we had was if the intestines, through some kind of accident, they were actually ripped out of the birds. The outside of the bird, the skin was ripped and the intestines fall out. That's okay, as long as there's no hole in the intestines. Omer Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, now wait a minute. There's also incipient tarfus in the intestines. And what is that? If you push those intestines back in and you twisted something, forget it. A twisted intestine is going to end up with a hole in the intestine. And that makes it an incipient trephus. And that can even happen, as you know, can even happen in large mammals. Even while they're alive, they can get a twist in the bowels, and that means you got to shoot the horse before it just in agony dies because of that twist. It's exactly the same thing over here with the bird. If anything is twisted, there's going to be a disaster. And if you pushed it back in without care, you're going to be shefting a treifa if you do that. So loshana l'shelo hipech b'hem. You didn't twist anything when you put them back in. Avo hipech b'hem. It's automatically a trefa because it is going to block the intestine. And if you take a look in the pasuk, it says, "Hu asecha vayechoneneka." What does that teach us? Nolamit shebarak Kadosh Baruch Hu konaniot. What is the meaning of konanecha? Konanecha is a lotion of the cane. What is the cane? The proper base for the menorah, right? Used there too, but for the don't want you to see your moment. So come on, somebody, please tell me the water bin. I forgot the
what? Form?
What?
Plate?
What? The word, yeah, the kohanim. Where did you wash your hands this morning in the base? I mean, she washed it from the kiyar. Thank God. Okay,
right. So the thing has a base.
The kiyar has a kan. So the kiyar vikano. So vikonanecha.
And?
What? A base.
A base.
Yes. So that teaches us that everything has its proper base, its proper place. She'im ne'pach achat me'en eino yachol lichyot. If you flip that base, you put it in wrong, it's not going to survive. And there was a beautiful drush of Rabbi Meir about that pasuk. Tanya, haya Rabbi Meir omer, hu asecha vayechoneneka, that means that you are completely vayechoneneka. Everything is based on you. You are a kracha to kulaba. You are completely self-contained. Mimenu kohanav. Klal Yisrael brings its own neviim, not Balak ben Zippor. Mimenu neviav. Mimenu sarav. Mimenu melachav. Not like Balak, who becomes a melech on Moab. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, everything is self-contained. Shenemar, mimenu pina, mimenu yateid. This is the way that Zechariah puts it. Mimenu keshet milchama. Everything is mimenu. And therefore, it is able to be completely without dependency on trumps and the like. Now, there was once a mice, if you're talking about the possibility of a hippoch in the intestines. So there was this aramoa. It's very strange what this aramoa means. It's not clear whether it really means an arama. I mean, okay, it's different yourselves, but take the Gemara Kapashas. It was someone from Aram, which is, of course, very nice for this week's parasha, so we'll continue with an armoa. And he was Chazila Ugava. He's looking at a guy up on the roof. The guy falls off of the roof. His stomach bursts open. And he was Nofal Meigul Ara, Pake Krisa, even Nofal Mayane. His intestines poured out. Now, he knew that if they try to replace these intestines and sew them up, that there's a very good chance that there's going to end up being a blockage in the intestines by pushing them back in. So he needed to get the person to go into such a shock that he would pull his own intestines in by going, ah! So how did he get him to do that? So Asilivrei, he brings the guy's son, this little kid, brings him outdoors, and this Arami, of course, knows how to do magical tricks, and so all fits into the parsha, you know, Achizas Einayim. So he shechs that man's son in front of his eyes. That's what he makes it look like. Achizas Einayim. It was just an illusion. He didn't do anything, but the father thought that this guy actually shechted his son, and he goes, ah! So Ingid the Isnar and pulls in his intestines. Olamayone, this guy runs over with his ever handy needle and thread. They don't call it handy for nothing. He's got a needle and thread, runs over and sews up his tummy before those intestines can come out again. That's what I call a guy. That's why some have a girsa over here, a rofe, not armo, but rofa. But anyway, so he must have been very handy with the stitches, and he stitched this guy up, and he did very well from that point forwards. Ah, you got a smile from a Richie, let me tell you.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Okay, Rabbi Osai, beautiful.